Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for the vacationing Jim Garrity. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Ian, we start with the good that certainly has a twinge of crazy to it. But the good part is that after multiple documented instances of Brian Williams either making things up out of whole cloth or exaggerating in his broadcasts and in other media appearances, NBC has decided he will not be returning as the anchor of the NBC Nightly News. That job appears to be Lester Holtz for the foreseeable future. However, Williams will be staying with the network and will apparently become the face of MSNBC, especially when it comes to breaking news coverage. The good news, obviously, is that there is a consequence for Williams not upholding the trust that the company and viewers placed in him over many years. And obviously, as a result of his dishonesty, where else should he go but MSNBC?
Right. NBC has done basically sort of the best they can do to save face here. We knew when they didn't fire him immediately that he probably wasn't going to end up being fired in the long run, simply because it would look too bad for NBC at the corporate level. So they've done what they can by retaining him, but shunting him into the fringes. And that brings to mind two other things. One is, it's good for MSNBC, I think, because Brian Williams actually has broadcast talent. Which is something you certainly can't say of, say, Melissa Harris Perry or some of the other folks on there. Also, for Brian Williams to be the face of MSNBC is certainly a makeover in the right direction if the previous face was Al Sharpton or Rachel Maddow. but I have to think that for Mr. Williams himself, this is something like that scene at the end of Robin Hood Men in Tights, where the Sheriff of Nottingham can either die or he can marry the horrible hag, and he agrees to marry her, and then as she's carting him off, he says, I take it back. You know, I have to think that for Brian Williams, this might be a fate worse than death.
It could be. That's quite a motley crew over there at MSNBC, and he does know how to read a teleprompter, though, which is more than we can say for half of the hosts that they employ. Yeah. Even in primetime, Al Sharpton being the very worst. And speaking of Al Sharpton, Ian, he will probably not be doing his show from New York tonight. That's because he's in Charleston, South Carolina. And that is the focus of our second martini, a bad, horrific martini. Here is the police chief from Charleston, South Carolina, Greg Mullen, explaining what happened in a mass shooting in his city on Wednesday night.
A multiple homicide that occurred at the Emmanuel AME Church on Calhoun Street here in the city of Charleston. We believe this is a hate crime. That's how we're investigating it.
Eight people instantly killed by this gunman, a witness who ended up telling police quite a bit, ultimately died later at the hospital, another person injured. Police have identified the suspect as 21-year-old Dylan Roof, and just as we record this, we're learning that he is now in police custody, which is obviously very good news. This should shock the conscience of everyone involved. There's been a lot of tension, political tension, over a lot of different racially tinged issues from Ferguson to Baltimore. This is one that should galvanize the nation and would probably behoove everyone involved to just leave the politics out of this.
Yeah, I think that's right. Absolutely unspeakable tragedy that the people of Charleston are facing this morning, and there's simply no way to adequately express how horrific this is, and certainly what they're going through. The unfortunate thing is the nature of the mass media culture, the Twitter culture, etc., is that it's hard for an event like this not to be instantly politicized. And already this morning, we're seeing people saying this was a result of South Carolina's lax gun laws. It was a result of South Carolina's being willing to fly the Confederate flag over the state capitol. And Selina Maxwell has already written, "Why aren't conservatives outraged about the religious freedom breach that took place here?" I mean, the first two explanations are patent nonsense. South Carolina has much stricter gun laws, in fact, than many of the notoriously strict states in the Northeast. Dylan Roof is looking at pictures, looking at his Facebook profile, etc. You can't blame his actions on a Confederate flag flying in a state that also has a minority Indian governor and the first black senator since Reconstruction. And then this religious freedom argument is just a cheap jab, a cheap nonsense jab. So it's really unfortunate that events like this are not likely to bring people together in condemnation of the type of actor who would do this, who's just a despicable person.
On to the crazy martini now, and it's obviously hard to transition to something a little more lighthearted after such a horrific story in Charleston. But Ian, I think it was actually in one of your previous appearances subbing for Jim where we talked about the move to kick Andrew Jackson off the 20 and replace him with a woman, any woman. Just pick one. Doesn't even really matter who it is. They had like a March Madness-style bracket on some site trying to figure out who it should be because, darn it, it's just time. So now the Treasury Department has gotten into the act, but instead of going after the 20, they say that's the 10 that's due next for security upgrades. So they're trying to say that there's going to be a woman on the 10 by the year 2020, which would coincide with the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote through the constitutional amendment process. And once again, they haven't decided who that actually ought to be. It's just time. A little bit of blowback and Secretary Jack Lew saying, well, it doesn't necessarily mean Alexander Hamilton's not going to be on the 10. There's just going to be a woman somewhere on the 10 as well. So here we go again.
Now we're going to start just putting whole crowds of people on there and make sure that they're split 50-50 or something. Look, I understand why Hamilton might be getting the boot. He's not a president, which is probably a big factor, the other potential candidate being Benjamin Franklin. But it is sort of odd, given that Hamilton was the first Secretary of the Treasury, largely responsible for the financial setup that the early American government decided to go with. So there's good reason to have him on our currency. The second fact is, I don't think anyone has a problem with having a woman on our currency. What they have a problem with, what I think conservatives who might sort of roll their eyes at this have a problem with, is the knee-jerk impulse to have sexual identity represented in every nook and cranny of American life, simply so that it makes the type of person who cares about this feel better, which is all that this really, really amounts to. There are plenty of women who deserve the honor and the admiration of Americans for great deeds all down through history, from colonial times to the modern era. But what this is really about is just having the right sex of individual on the currency to somehow say that America, because of that fact, is now a more just and equal place. And that's just nonsense. The feminist movement that is so interested in this is really not interested in gains of substance as much as in gains of style. That's where conservatives push back is, look, conservatives absolutely want women to succeed, but we want them to succeed in terms of substance, not in these sort of cheap, flashy things that just make people feel better.
Ian, how could we make their heads figuratively explode here? Can we stuff a ballot box for a conservative woman that would make the whole movement just throw up their hands and quit?
Yeah, some people were asking, you know, well, Rachel Carson has been on the list, of course, the writer of Silent Spring, one of the left-wing environmental movement's Bibles. You know, why aren't we encouraging Ayn Rand or Jean Kirkpatrick or, we could really make them crazy.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, several years before that happens, and this administration will mercifully be gone by 2020. Ian, great to have you subbing for Jim. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.